First up, though, yesterday, the Defense Department released the long-awaited game plan for how it plans to pull off one of the largest Pentagon reorganizations in decades, splitting the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, or ATNL, into two, and standing up the new position of Chief Management Officer. Andrew Hunter served as a senior official in the ATNL organization during the Obama administration. He's now a senior fellow in the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He joined me to share some initial takeaways from DOD's 31-page report.
I'll start by saying it's a very well-crafted report and a very well-crafted structure that they're putting forward for these two new organizations, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering and the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. It's clear that they worked hard to balance the two. So in dividing the baby of ATNL in two, I think these two organizations are pretty well balanced against one another, particularly when you consider that the old organization had as one of its elements an ASD for research engineering. And I think they've done a good job of folding functions into the R&E that belong there or that can further the mission of the R&E. So they made that actually a slightly larger organization than I was anticipating based on some of the rumors and signals that looked like they were out there.
Mm-hmm.
What I think will be crucial in how this works is ensuring that when these two offices really have marching orders from the Secretary of Defense based on a new national security strategy, based on whatever the department decides to do with what the last administration called the third offset strategy, focus on innovation, make sure that the form here really follows the function, that these structures align with that mission. But since we don't yet have total clarity on those issues, I think this is a very good start, a very reasonable place to start towards that effort. And the other thing I would say is that it's going to be critical for both of these organizations that these two undersecretaries be able to work hand in glove together, because to achieve the technology vision that the USD R&E is going to try to establish in the structure, there's going to need substantial assistance and support from the Undersecretary for Acquisition and Sustainment. So it's going to be really important for these two officials to at least see eye to eye on the substance.
And Andrew, you just hit on the issue that I think was my biggest initial takeaway is the linkage between the two undersecretaries. The report's pretty silent on that. It basically, just as I read it, says that the R&E undersecretary is responsible for technology development and risk reduction, and then at some point they throw it over the fence to ANS, who's responsible for bringing down the costs of this thing that they have not been involved in up until that point.
Yeah, and of course, you know, keep in mind that both officials are sitting on top of a structure where most of the action is happening with the services. And so a big part of the job here will be to influence the behavior of the Army, Navy, and the Air Force. And by Navy, I mean Department of Navy, inclusive of Marine Corps. So if there's any sense on the services that these two officials are at cross purposes with one another, then neither can be even remotely be effective.
There's also some emphasis in the report on the ANS organization reducing oversight, the way they put it is breaking down barriers to execution and reducing layers of oversight in unnecessary process. Certainly that's possible, and I know that's one thing that you guys tried to do when you worked for Frank Kendall, but the natural tendency of most oversight organizations, I think, is not to reduce their own oversight. So how do they do that effectively?
Well, one of the things they've done with this structure is essentially abolish what we called the IPT leads, IPT being integrated product team. And so under the old structure, you had four IPT leads who focused on things like space and intelligence. You had tactical warfare systems. You had on the information side, the IT acquisition side, there was an IPT lead. So that whole structure existed to carry out the milestone review process and to lead the milestone review process and the approvals of the milestone review process. And since that whole review process has essentially been handed to the services to lead, what they've done here is they've eliminated that staffing structure entirely and folded the IPT leads together into one, looks like one DASD who will monitor the process. So that's one area where it seems to me they really have worked to align this structure to a different mission that this organization is taking on in the new regime.
One other thing that popped out at me was this new strategic intelligence analysis cell. And I know the department's been trying to integrate intelligence more into the acquisition process ever since, I think it was in Better Buying Power 3.0. But I don't think there's been a formal structure or office for that up until now, has there?
No, I agree. That's definitely new here, and it's significant. And it it's logically ties into that setting that technology vision for the department, because you need to understand both the opportunities that are coming to fruition in the defense market, in the private sector market outside of the normal defense space, but also the threats that are out there and the challenges that are popping up from adversaries and sometimes just from the way that markets are shifting, and which puts existing structures at threat.
Acquisition workforce is briefly mentioned, but I think it's important. They seem to have some big ambitions there, saying that it's going to require a re-education of the workforce, changing the focus, as they put it, from what is the requirement to what capability is needed. So I guess two questions there. Have they diagnosed that issue correctly? Is that really what the acquisition workforce's focus is on right now? And is that the right way to go?
Well, I think that's a reasonable framing. I might phrase it a little differently in my own mind, focused less on the acquisition workforce figuring out what capabilities need to be and more about how does one effectively communicate with the user community to determine what the capabilities need to be. And maybe there's a little bit of tension there. You know, is it a push or is it a pull? Part of the idea of the research and engineering undersecretary is that there's a technology push. But what's also critical is you've got to have user community pull. But I do think that both of those things require a little bit of shift in the mindset for the acquisition workforce. So that's a point of commonality. What's interesting is there's focus in the report text on the acquisition workforce, but there's not a clear person in the organization chart who's going to be clearly focused on those issues that I can identify.
They say that they're going to achieve all this at the same time as complying with the mandated 25% headquarters reduction. Does that sound reasonable, given that, as you kind of indicated a minute ago, they're going to be doing fewer things in terms of oversight?
I think it is reasonable. I think the 25% reduction goal is a reasonable goal. And I don't see any major barriers to getting there. That's not to say it's going to be pleasant, particularly for people in place now. But I think they can populate this structure at the lower personnel level.
Final thing, and then I'll let you go, Andrew. What are the biggest remaining questions, aside from the linkage between the two organizations that we talked about? What are the biggest remaining questions that DoD needs to answer over the implementation period?
Well, to me, there's still an open question on what I would characterize as who's driving the train for incremental innovation.
Mm.
You know, the USD R&E is clearly going to be focused on technology innovation, and they have a significant mandate for that. I think we haven't talked about it much yet, but the new chief management officer is probably going to have a focus on process innovation, which is another important element of innovation that I think the department needs to have. But it's less clear to me in this structure who's going to be driving incremental innovation, which has historically been one of the main areas in which the military systems incorporate new technology and new innovations. And there's some elements of the mandate of the Undersecretary for Research and Engineering that tie to that, but it's not clear to me that it's a major organizational focus. And hopefully that's something that can be clarified going forward.